We're on the top of Daf Chaf Hey Omid Aleph, and if you recall, we had a sugya which describes a scenario that has three different parts to it. And let's go over quickly the three different parts. One is called the Shvil. That's a row or a pathway between the vines. You know, you have rows of vines. And that leads you to a Rechava. Rechava is some sort of wide open area. And in this case, it has the dimensions of a Karpaf. It's above a Besa Sayim. And on the top side of this Rechava, what you have is a masa in Aramaic, which in Hebrew is called a mavoi. And we were trying to figure out how exactly you would permit, you know, under what circumstances can you permit carrying in the mavoi, carrying in the rechava, carrying in the shvil shel kramim. And Abai went through a whole bunch of different possibilities, and finally we landed with Rava, and Rava basically said the following, that we're going to set up a lechi at that point which connects the mavui into the rechava. The lechi will serve to be matir tiltal in the mavui, and now the lechi, once it has achieved that legal status, we apply what's called migu, and since it operates effectively as a lechi, in order to allow carrying in the mavui, is as if you had closed off the mavui, then it's operative also for the rechava, and now we're going to allow you to carry in the Rechava. And what does this mean? This means that although the Rechava was a Makom Mukaf Shelo L'Shem Dira, and now you have to add a new Mechitza, a new closure for the purpose of Dira. And that's exactly what the lechi is going to accomplish. It's going to kill two birds with one stone. The lechi at the same time will serve as an enclosure for the mavui, allowing me to carry in the mavui. And at the same time, it'll serve as an additional mechitza for l'shem dior in the rechava. So the rechava now becomes a mukefes Lidira. Before it was Mukefes Shelo L'Shem Dira, now it's Mukefes L'Shem Dira. And Rava is now trying to improve on Abaye, because one of the objections that Rava raised, and actually Abaye himself raised this objection, and that was Ein Osim Mechitza Al Gabi Mechitza. So just to put another mechitza around the rechava when the rechava itself has its own mechitza, that doesn't make any sense. But now, says Rava, the solution to this problem is that we put a lechi at the entrance into the mavui, and that lechi will allow tiltal in the mavui, and once that lechi serves that function, then likewise it could be considered a mechitza for the rechava. And now it's called Mukaf Lidira. Okay. Now we have another question. Are you allowed to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava after you set up this Lechi? I understand that all the Bnei HaMavui, those people who have houses that surround the Mavui, and they want to use that Mavui to go out into, let's say, the city, which is, as we say, was in the north, that's fine. But are you allowed to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava? And the Gemara quotes two opinions about this. Now, intuitively, before we see the Gemara here on top of Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, we would say the following. that why shouldn't you be able to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava? We have a principle that if you have two areas, one in and of itself is Mutal Taltil Bo, you're allowed to carry inside that area. The other is Asur Taltil Bo. So if the first opens up into the second, then the second is Oser the first, right? That's called Parutz B'Melua, that phrase. Oh, but here, it would seem intuitively that everything is fine. Why? Because the Mavui has its Tikkun Mana, Tikkun Mana Mavui, because of the Lechi. And that Lechi at the same time served as a Hekef Lidira for the Rechava. And therefore you're allowed to carry within the Rechava. So if I'm allowed to carry within the Rechava, and the Mavui now spills into the Rechava, and I'm allowed to carry both in the Mavui in and of itself, and in the Rechava in and of itself, then I should be able to carry from one to the other. And the Gemara now has to analyze Mandashari, that's the top line, according to the Mandiyahu, who says it's Mutter, I understand very well, the Haleka Diurin, which means the following. There may be houses that surround the Rechava, but there's no opening from those houses into the Rechava. So the Rechava basically serves the following function. And it could go either direction, it doesn't matter. Either you're coming from the Mavui, and you want to go all the way to the river, which is on the other side at the end of the Kerem, the Shvil Shel Kerem. Or let's say you're coming from the Shvil Shel Kerem, and you want to go out to the Mavui, out to the city. So you go through this Rechava. And either way, the Rechava is only helping... What word should I use? It's only servicing the Shvil Shel Kerem or the Mavui. Why? So that's called the Haleka Diurin. In other words, there are no members of the Rechava, so to speak. There are no batim. There are no houses that have access and use of the Rechava. The Rechava is a self-enclosed enclave, which again facilitates, as we said, going up and down from the Kerem, you know, all the way up, from the Mavui all the way down, and so forth and so on. But nobody is living in the Mavui. I'm sorry. No one is living in the Rechava, meaning no batim have entrance ways into the Rechava. The Rechava, we assume, is completely enclosed. He says, "Ein chatzeros o batim psuchim l'rechava." There are no courtyards or homes that open up into the Rechava. And therefore, if the Mavui opens up into the Rechava, and that's what we said, it was the purpose of the service of the Rechava, is kol ha-Rechava b'shus b'nei ha-Mavuihu. The only residents, I'll use that word, who are accessing the Rechava are the B'nai HaMavui, right? Because they have houses that open up into this Mavui. They go from the entrance into the Mavui all the way down through the Rechava. And therefore, Mandi Asar, says the Gemara, who outside of the B'nai Mavui has use from this Rechava. None of the houses or the courtyards that border on this Rechava have entranceways into the Rechava, so that the only group of people who are using the Rechava are the B'nai HaMavui, that use the Mavui and the Rechava, you know, to have access to go through the Kerem, the Shvil Shel Kerem. And therefore, that principle that we mentioned earlier, that if you have a group of people who have access, then they also have to be part of the of the, like, for example, remember we said many times that a Mavui requires Shitufe Mavos, right? That all the Bnei Mavui gather together and they put one loaf of bread together and so forth and so on. But there's no one besides them, because any other homeowners that border on the outside of the Rechava have no access to the Rechava. So there's no reason to invite any residents other than the Bnei Mavui to join together in their Shitufe Mavos. So there's no one in the environs of the Rechava who could generate an Iser on the Bnei Mavui. Umadi Osar, but then there's one Madi Omer says that you're not allowed to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava. And he says, the Zimnin Havi Be Diurin Vi Asil Toltule. We have to be worried about the following development of events down the line. All of a sudden, those who live on the outskirts of the Rechava decide to open up entranceways into the Rechava, and they're allowed to do so. They have access to the Rechava. The Rechava is public property. It doesn't belong to anyone. And the Bnei Mavui cannot prohibit the Bnei Habatim that now have Pesach, they now have entranceways into the Rechava. They can't prohibit them from using and accessing the Rechava. The Rechava is public property. Oh, now you have a problem. Why? Because the Bnei Mavui made a Shitufe Mavos that would cover the Bnei Mavui. But when they want to go into and carry something into the Rechava, well, they got to get the permission of many others who are now using and benefiting from the Rechava, because now the Batim have opened up entranceways into the Rechava, which they have the right to do. Nobody could stop them from doing that. So now you're going to need a sheet of muvos that is going to invite not only the Bnei Mavui, but also now we'll call it the Bnei Rechava, if you could create a new terminology now, for all those batim and residents who are now opening up entranceways and utilizing the Rechava. So we have to invite them in. Meanwhile, you've told the Bnei Mavui that they're allowed to carry into the Rechava. So now you have to go ahead and tell them, no, we need to do a new sheet of Mavos, and we got to get the participation of the Bnei, what I call the Bnei Rechava. That's going to be very confusing, and we risk the danger of people continuing as they always did to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava. Now the situation has changed and they're no longer permitted to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava, because now we have this whole entity, this whole corporation called the Bnei HaRechava. And we need to invite them in to join in the Shituf Mavos. So therefore, one man Diomar in the Gemara says, you know what? Let's avoid all these possible pitfalls and headaches, and we're not going to allow you to carry from the Mavui into the Rechava. We're going to ki'ilu imagine that there are entranceways into the Rechava, and don't be such a big shot, Mr. Bnei Mavui, because you're not the only one, or your group of Bnei Mavui, it's not the only group that has exclusive rights to use and benefit from the Rechava. Okay. Now we start a little bit of a new sugya. It's not brand new. We're still talking about Karpath. And we're looking for a way of allowing carrying in the Karpath. Karpath yoser mi beisa sayim shelo hukaf ledira. And therefore you're not allowed to carry in the Karpath. Ubalamato. What methods can we offer him? What possibilities to diminish the Karpath? In other words, get it down to a base of Sayim or less. And the first thing that comes to my mind, which the Gemara is going to now approach, is planting trees. If you remember, we said that trees are very useful for shade, and that becomes Hukaf Ledira. And would that be a viable option? So he says, Miato bi'ilonos lo avimut. If he plants trees in this Karpath, it still remains a Karpath and it's asu b'tiltul. And why is that so? The answer is, as Rashi supplies it, and the Rashba embellishes it, it's because, you know, there are Ilonos and Akarpaf. It's not a case where you plant rows and rows of trees. You know, you want to put a tree here and a tree there, get a little shade here and a little shade there. Well, guess what? Akarpaf also has trees in it. And even though it's lo hukaf ledira. Let me just see if he quotes the Rashba here. One second. Oh. Now the Rashba wants to know the following. He doesn't ask our question. What happens if he would fill up the entire Karpaf with trees? He asks a different question. He says that the concept of miut, which means to reduce the size, the base asayim of the Karpaf, the viability and the accepted orchestration would be, or engineering maybe we'll call it, would be to create a makom bifnei atzmo. Right? So you have a karpaf. If I can carve out a makom bifnei atzmo, which means an area that has its own status, its own significance, then it now reduces the size of the karpaf. So again, I'm not going into details about, how many amos and so forth and so on, but just in a conceptual world, if I could put down, different budkas, let's say, I would put down little booths and houses that have mechitzos on all four sides, that would certainly be mamayit the karpaf. And if those little huts would be large enough to reduce the size of the karpaf down to a base of sayim or less, that would be fine. So the Rashba wants to know, what's the status of a tree that you plant in a karpaf? Does it have the status of a makom bifnei atzmo? Why does the Gemara insist that lo havi miut? And the Rashba thinks, logically, it should depend upon the size of the tree. And what happens, he says, if the tree has the dimensions of what we call a Rishus HaYachid, in other words, it's 10 Tvachim high, and it's 4 Tvachim wide. He says, Az Yachalu Lechashev Rishus Bifnei Atzma, then we should logically say that the tree which has the dimensions that would set up a Rishus HaYachid, it's 10 Tvachim high, 4 Tvachim wide, that should certainly be memayit the karpaf. No, gamkein eino memayit hakarpaf. The Gemara doesn't distinguish what the size, what the dimensions of this tree are. Shedin ze eino toli bechilik reshuyos. And it's not enough just to set up a new reshus, right? The Ilan now has the measurements of a new reshus, a reshus hayoch. That's not enough. Mishum she'a ilan u'chelek mitashmish ha'karpaf. Because the tree functions and services the karpaf. V'nimdad imo. And therefore the calculation of its space that it occupies, its dimensions, is included in the karpaf. So again, in legal, abstract, halachic terms of reshuyos, this Elon has the dimensions of a separate Rishus, but the Rashba says that's not enough to be Mamayit, because when you want to be Mamayit, it's not enough that you have some sort of legal entity. What you need is something that functions unto itself and on behalf of the area that it encompasses, as opposed to something that functions on behalf of the Karpaf. It's only an external function. It gives shade to the Karpaf. So if it's giving shade to the Karpaf, then even if al pidin it's a reshus bifnei atzmo, it's gavah yud and it's rachav dalet, it still is part of the Karpaf. And it's calculated within the size of the Karpaf. However, and here the Rashba is anticipating the next line in the Gemara, if you set up an amud, let's say you set up a pillar, and this pillar is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, the pillar has its own function. For example, let's say, you remember we had discussions about Omid Lakata. If, you know, he's got a bundle on his back and he needs to rest a little bit and shift it from one side of his shoulder to the other. You remember that? So that's the function of an amud. You know, imagine if you had a fire hydrant. You know, a fire, well, again, I don't know. Then maybe that's more complicated. I shouldn't get into that. So if you read the next line of the Gemara says, Banabo amud gavah asar v'chava arba. So he builds a pillar, and it has the dimensions of Rishus HaYochid. It's 10 tefachim high, and it's 4 tefachim wide. That's called a makom chashiv b'fnei atzmo. And it doesn't serve the karpaf, like the case of the Rashba with the tree. And therefore, if the karpaf now does no longer calculates a beis asayim, then it's no longer a karpaf. So it's really interesting, because in the past what we discussed was that if you want to change the status of a karpaf, you have to restructure the mechitzos. You have to take them down. Remember, you need a pirtz of 10 amos, and then, you know, set up the mechitzos again, or add a lechi in the last sugya that we had. Now he's not changing any mechitzos. He's not making a new hekef dira. What he's doing is, he's reducing the minimum size of a karpaf which generates an isur tiltil. A karpaf that generates an isur tiltil has to have a minimal size of beis asayim. Now he chips away at that beis asayim, reduces the size. Once it falls below the beis asayim plus, then it's no longer a karpaf. But in order to do so, you have to set up a place that's bifnei atzma, that exists on its own. And that's called an amud gavah asar chava arba. That's called a makum chashuv b'fnei atzmo, and it has its own identity, its own function, and therefore it separates itself from the karpaf. And now the karpaf, as we calculated, is no longer a karpaf, because it no longer has a beis asayim. Havi miut. That is a valid, viable way of being matir, allowing tiltil in the karpaf. Now we have a machlokes between Rava and Rabba. And he wants to know what happens if you have an amud, you have this pillar, it's 10 tefachim high, but it's only 3 tefachim wide. Not 4 tefachim, but 3 tefachim. So if it's pachos mishlosha, if it's 2.9 tefachim wide, lo havi miut, then it's undeniable. That's universally understood, that less than 3 tefachim wide would not be a makom chashuv b'fnei atzma. But what happens if it has 3 tefachim but not 4 tefachim? Is mishlosha v'yad arba, from a width of 3 tefachim till 4 tefachim, Rabba omar havi miut, v'Rava omar lo havi miut. Rabba Omar Havi Miut Ahanofik Lemi Toras Lavut. Well, Don, as you'll want to say Lavut, okay? Whichever way you pronounce it, but we know what it means. It means 3 tefachim. Once it's 3 tefachim, that gives it a chashivus. Like, for example, if you have an open space, right, between two pasim that we discuss very often, and that open space is 3 tefachim or more, that breaks up this connection. You know, the 3 tefachim is considered already significant. Or, for example, remember we spoke about the mechitza tluya, and you have 3 tefachim on the bottom, and gedi and bokimbo. Once it's 3 tefachim, that's already a whole new entity. According to Rabbah, that entity, even though, again, it's not relevant here, you know, we're not, please, let's not misunderstand, we're not activating the principle of lovehood here. I mean, lovehood means when you have a distance between two different objects, and you close the gap, you know, with less than 3 tefachim. No, that's not what we're talking about here. But we see that the Torah gives a certain significance to the 3 tefachim of lovehood, and we're going to borrow that significance here and apply it to this amud, this a pillar that has a width of, says Rabbi, 3 tefach. And Rabbi says, lo havi mute. Why? Kaven de lo havi makom arba lo chashiv. When the Torah defines a makom, it always has a minimum width of 4 tefachim. Less than 4 tefachim wide is not called a makom. And we've seen this basically in the definition of of Akira Vanocha, if you remember what I mean. You know, when you pick up something and you carry it out, you have to pick it up from a place that's got a width of 4 tefachim. And so too, in a Rishus HaYochid, it's got to have not only a height of 10 tefachim, it has to have a width minimum of 4 tefachim. And I think we also had this, if I'm not mistaken, back in the Sugya of Chokikin Lahashlim. If you remember, you know, you didn't have a you didn't have a Korah that was high enough. It wasn't 10 tefachim. So you start digging into the ground to make sure that the ground is 10 tefachim below the Korah. And there we said that you have to dig an area that's at least, you know, okay, so I don't remember that sugya too well. I'd have to review. But in any event, 4 tefachim is a minimum. A minimum shear. Now, I have here a footnote or two that I wanted to share with you. Number one, he says, Lavud is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. Kol avir she'en bo shlosha tfachim ro'en osokilu sasum. V'atam she'en omrim lavud bi-avir yosim mi-shlosha tfachim mi-shum de-bashir kazeh yochol lavar gidim below ikuv. Right, so once you have an opening, a space that's 3 tefachim, then the little goats could simply pass through that small opening. He says, "Kosvu atosvis sha'af l'raba ein tzarech hamud lios rochav arba." Even though Rabba says that this pillar does not have to be we don't require it to be 4 tefachim in width. Mikomakom. In other words, a Rishus, whether it's a Rishus Arabim or for that matter, a Karmelis, climbs up to 10 Tefachim. So if we want to set up this Amud as outside the Karmelis, it's got to have a Gova, it has to have a height of 10 Tefachim. Okay. Now, are there any methods by which we can be matir a karpaf by setting up a machitza? And he says the following: Hirchik mina kosel arba tefachim v'asa machitza hoil. He says the following: you want to set up a new machitza, a kosel, a wall, and that wall will now be l'shem dira, such that all the area within that wall is now mutabitiltel, it's now a hukaf l'shem dira. So it's incumbent upon you to set up a distance between your new wall and the old wall. And what is that distance? It's arba tefachim, 4 tefachim. So therefore, when he sets up this kosel at a 4 tefachim distance from the pre-existing mechitzos, then he can be matir tiltel in the karpaf, because now the mechitza that he's setting up is 4 tefachim away from the old mechitza, the original mechitza, and now this new mechitza is a mechitza unto itself. It's not just an add-on or a chizuk. It's not just a tosefes to the original mechitza, and now this new mechitza is being set up l'shem dira, and that's going to be matir the entire karp. However, Pachos Mishlosha, if he sets up the second mechitza, meaning the kosel, within a very close proximity of the old mechitza, such that there's less than three tefachim between the two, lo hoil. This is not called a hekef mechitzos to be mati the karpaf, since there's no three tefachim space between the mechitzos. The mechitza he's putting up now is not considered its own mechitza. It's rather considered a tag on, shall we call it a tosefes or a chizuk, to the first mechitza. And therefore, there's no new hekef l'shem dira because you don't have a new mechitza, but rather you have an addition, a tag on to the old mechitza, which was shalo l'shem dira. Now again, we have Machlokas Rabba and Rofa. Mishlosha v'yad arba. What happens if the distance between the new kosel that he's setting up l'shem dira and the old kosel is three tfachim? Rabba omar hoil. Once there's a distance of three tfachim, again, if it's less than three tfachim, everybody agrees that it's only your kosel is only a tosefes. But if it's three tefachim and more, then Rabba, for one, says that moil. This is mati the karpaf. So a minimum three tefachim distance is required between the old mechitza and the new one, the kosel, and that he has. Because once you have three tefachim, you've left that entity, you know, that existing physical material object. That material object can expand, so to speak, its domain, its control for up to three tefachim. Now you're beyond three tefachim, your new kosel is just that. It's a new kosel. Rav Amar Eino Moil. Rav Amar Moil Dekon Nofik Lemitoris Lavud. Right, as long as there's a three tefachim distance, then it's a brand new mechitza bifnei atzma, which was hukaf ledira. But Rav Amar Eino Moil Kaven Delo Avi Mokom Arba Lo Chashiv. Rav always looks at the mokom. He's not looking at the space between the two mechitzos, but Rav wants to know: is there a mokom? The old mechitza spreads its wings and expands its scope and its domain to a makom. And a makom always has to have a minimum of four tefachim. So any kosel that you put in within less than four tefachim, tefachim minus a mashu, you see, let's call it 3.99 tefachim, that is part of the makom of the original mechitza, and therefore it doesn't have its own status. Okay, I don't know, he quotes here Prima Gadim, but I honestly don't know this. He says, Pirush V'Yigun, Tam Shim Hifzik Pachos Mishlosha Tfachim Lo Hoil. Rav Shimi Masni Lekula. Rabbi Shimei has this machlokes shin Rabba and Rava Lekula. What does that mean? They're not arguing about a pillar, which is three plus tefachim. According to Rav Shimei's transmission, everybody agrees, even Rava, that if you have an amud and it's three tefachim wide, then that certainly would be a miut, that would be mamayit the karpaf. They're not going to argue about a case where the kosel that he's putting up now is more than three tefachim away from the original mechitza. But rather, the machlokis is with regard to an amud that's pachos mishlosha tefach, or hirchik pachos mishlosha mea kosel. Sharaba Omar Af Bepochos Mishlosha Tfochim Ha'omud Mimait Vamachitza Materis. Rava Omar Shabepochos Mishlosha Tfochim Ein Ha'omud Mimait Vain Machitza Materis. So, according to Rav Shimi, this entire machlokas is in a case of less than shlosha tefachim. If it would have been shlosha tefachim, then Rava would also agree that it's memayit. But what I think Rav Shimi is doing here, he's taking what in the first Lishna, in other words, the first transmission was a svara of Rava, and he is telling us that Rava's position is so seductive, it's so compelling, that it must be that Rava would also agree that once you get three tefachim and it's no longer lavud, that's enough to set it up as a separate entity. And that means that you have an amud that's three tefachim wide, that already gives it a certain significance unto itself. That's that dimension, that size of three tefachim. But the machlokas is about less than three tefachim. So I'm trying to figure out, why does Rabba hold that even if it's less than three tefachim, it's memayit? He writes a footnote here in the name of the Ritva. Shesover Rabba, shebishvil emayit bekarpav ein tzarech sheyeh ba'amud shir chashuv el af im ein bi'amud el shir muot. Kevon she'eno mitashmishe akarpaf, hareu memayit mishetach akarpaf. What do we get out of this Ritva? Again, are you with me? We're trying to understand Rabba, who allows for less than three tefachim. So the Ritva is saying that it's not mitashmishei akarpaf. Let me just underline those words of the Ritva. Eino mitashmishei akarpaf. Well, let me just, I'm not going to add much, but I think I'm going to reformulate the Ritva in my own language. The Ritva is wondering the following. What exactly is memayit the karpaf? And there are two ways of approaching this, and that's going to be the machlokas Rabba and Rava. One way of approaching it is that you've got to set up something new that has its own identity, so to speak, and therefore it's not part of the karpaf, and that's going to be memayit. The other approach says, no, you don't have to create something new, something that has its own identity. What you do is you have to have something that pulls away from the karpaf. It detracts from the karpaf. It's no longer calculated within the space and the area of the karpaf, the base of science. And then afkarmina is going to be pachas mishlosha. Because on the one hand, pachas mishlosha cannot be considered as a makom chashuv bifnei atzmo, because the minimum of chashivas has to be four tefachim. But on the other hand, I can always ask about how to define an object, an entity that has less than four tefachim. And I ask the question, well, is it swallowed up in the karpaf? Or, although it's not an entity unto itself, but it's certainly not part of the karpaf. So Rabba says, all I need is to get an amud or a kosel that I added here to this karpaf, and it's not functioning as part of the karpaf. So once I have an amud, which has its own function, or now I have a new kosel, it cannot be considered part of the karpaf. It's not batil. Oh, that's a good word. It's not batil to the karpaf. It hasn't lost its identity to the karpaf because it's not functioning for the karpaf. And here we're relying a lot on that Rashba with regard to trees. You remember that the Rashba says that even if the tree would have the dimensions of a reshus bifnei atzma, it would still not be memayit because the shade is, and the trees are being planted for this, right, for the function of the karpa. But I wouldn't say that an amud or a new kosel in any way is functioning for the karpaf. Adrav, the karpaf was an open area that was used by, you know, for planting vegetables. Now he's adding a kosel because he wants more privacy. Lomazogin, right? He wants to do different activities there. So it's residential. It's hukaf l'dira. And since the kosel is not batel to the karpaf, because it doesn't function on behalf of the karpaf, therefore Rabba holds it's mamayit. And Rava says, no, you want to be mamayit from a karpaf? Set up something that has a status unto itself. It's got its own significance, its own chashivas, and for that we need three tefachim, I meant to say. I said four, and I meant to say three. All right. Now the Gemara says the following. Tochbo, here's another possible alternative to be mamait a karpaf. Tochbo tit. Let's say he wants to reduce or diminish the area that's being encompassed by the kosel. Right, the kosel is surrounding a beis asayim. What happens if he adds to the thickness of the kosel so that he reduces the airspace within the machitzos, that's surrounded by the kosel? That's called tochbo. Right, he takes cement and he adds a layer of cement, you know, to the wall. V'yachol lamod bifnei atzmo. How thick is this added cement? If it's enough that it could stand on its own, that's how thick it is. In other words, if you pulled out the kosel, you would still be left with a wall unto itself. That wall would be made of this cement. You know, this reminds me of the halachas of amida, right? Let's say, for example, a kohen who's doing avoda in the mikdash, he needs amida, otherwise his avoda is disqualified. So what happens if the kohen is leaning on something? Is he still considered standing, or he's not standing? So the Gemara says it depends what happens if you pull that thing off. You know, pull it away. Would he fall, or would he still be able to stand? Here also, you know, if you pull away the kosel, and I don't know exactly how you would do that engineering-wise, but we'd be left with a thick wall that's made of tit. That wall itself is a kosel unto itself, and therefore it's memait. Eino yochol lamod bifnei atzmo. But if once you pull out the kosel, the wall that's left from the tit is going to fall. It's such a thin layer. Is then eino memayit. Oh, that's according to Rav. Now we have Rava. Rava is going to say that havi miut. In other words, even though this additional thickness that you added to the wall could not possibly stand independently, nevertheless, it's mamayit. The Rav Amar lo avi mamayit. Okay, so in this case, honestly, I intuitively identify with Rav. So let's see. Rav Amar avi mamayit hashta miya koi. Let's look at it now. And I think Rav is much more physical, You know what I mean by physical? He's looking at the material reality here. Where is the airspace of Beis HaSayim? Right now, you don't have an area of Beis HaSayim that is encircled by a kosel, because you amamite that area by adding tit. So I don't have to look at theoretical possibilities. Well, what would be if you remove the kosel and Humpty Dumpty and the whole thing would fall down? That's irrelevant. Right now, you don't have, go take a measuring rod, and you will not come up with a Beis HaSayim that's enclosed by the Kosel, because the Kosel itself is within the Beis HaSayim, because he added the thickness of the wall. But Rav Amar, lo avimit, why? Kevin de lo yochel of making b'fnei atzmo lav klumu. We don't look at the airspace and calculate the area that's encompassed by the kosel, but rather we look for the entity. Is there a new entity here that's mamayit? Well, this added cement, with all due respect, does not have any status. It's not an entity. It's just batel. It's part of the kosel itself. Now let me just take a look if he adds anything in the English translation here. He says the following. He says, since the... Oh, he calls it mud. Okay, I called it concrete. I don't know, honestly, how he knows it's mud. I can't... that's kind of murky. That's kind of muddy. I don't know. He calls it mud. All right, I call it cement. Okay. He says, Kevan de lo yochel emekim ifneyatza, since the mud cannot stand on its own, it is insignificant. I think what he means is it's batel and it's just swallowed up in the kosel, and it does not reduce the size of the karpov. Okay, he doesn't add that much. Next. Okay. Now, again, let's just review before we go on. He has a little bit of an introduction. He says, Karpov yosemi beis hasayim shel hukaf ledira, shayamukaf mechitza b'sholosh tzdadim, ubitzad ha'raviyah ha'yetel gavoa asorat tfachim, shayamishamesh mechitza lekarpov. Okay, so in the fourth side, instead of a mechitza, a classic mechitza, he's got a tel gavoa asorat tfachim, a mound that is 10 tfachim high. Now, what happens? Hirchik minatel arba v'asa mechitza. So he distances himself from that mound, 4 tfachim, and he sets up a mechitza for the purpose of diur. Okay. So he says, Afsha dain yesh bekarpaf yose mi beis asayim hoil ha-hekev shu osa achshav ha-achshav sa karpaf kemokam shukaf ledir mutul taltub. Whoa, I see something here that I may have missed before, and I should have commented about this before. It seems like to be matir a karpaf, all you need is one mechitza. What do I mean? That hukaf ledira, I should say hukaf shelo ledira, which is a karpaf, means that all four sides are shelo ledira. If I can take one of those four mechitzos and set it up l'shem dira, then I don't care about the other three, which was shelo l'shem dira. So one valid mechitza will impact and uplift the entire entity of the karpaf and all the other three mechitzos. So he's got a tail, and that's the fourth mechitza of the hekev karpaf. And now he sets up a kosel inside that mount. I mean, inside meaning in the direction of the inner area of the karpaf. And if he's marchik, that... he's marchik that mechitza. How much was he marchik? It says here, arba tfachim. Oh, now we want to cover even Rava, maybe. All right, let's see. So he's marchik that machitza for tefachim. What I don't understand here, who cares about the mount? I mean, let's say it was a regular machitza. We said, I'm not sure. There's something here that I'm missing. Okay, he says the following. He says, "Hova hekev shu osak shalach shivus akav kumokum shukav ledir matul taltil bo." V'mehirchik me'atel pachos me'asar tefachim afilu imhirchik pachos mishlosha tefachim o al sfas hatel is Rav Chizur Rav Huna chana omar hoil. I don't know, this sounds awfully similar to what we had before in Rava and Rabba. So we're talking about a harchaka of... So if it's harchaka of four amo, of four tfach, then everything is fine. And now it becomes hukaf l'dira. But if it was pachos mishlosha, he doesn't even discuss a case of shlosha ad arba. I don't know. All of a sudden that middle case got dropped. But if it's pachos mishlosha tfachim, hirchik pachos mishlosha tfachim, is according to one man diomar, hoil. You know what I think is going on here? I'm going to just throw out a svara here. I don't know if anybody's going to say this. But maybe it means that a tail is an inferior kind of a machitza. So that if your machitza... Well, let's leave Arav Shimi that we had before. But if your machitza was less than a three tefachim distance from the pre-existing machitzos, then what are you doing? You didn't add any new machitza. But in a case of a tel, which is not a real bona fide machitza, it's almost like a natural entity that exists but was not placed there or constructed for the purpose of a machitza. Again, that's all a figment of my imagination. I don't know if that's true. In such a case, at least according to one opinion, you don't even have to be marchik your kosel, your machitza, from the tel. So that if we have a case of pachos mishlosha, then according to one man, the omer, it's hoil. And he has another case here called... He made a machitza al sfas hatel. So I think sfas hatel means he digs the machitza into the mound itself. So I think once again, he's dramatizing that this tel is not really a machitza. I'm sort of negating the tail by setting up a machitza inside the tail, so to speak. You know, the tail is made of soft substance. Let's say it's a mound of dirt. So you can actually dig a machitza on the bottom. You know, the bottom part of this machitza will dig into the tail. Let me just see if he adds anything here. Have a great day, John. Okay. So he says the following. He moved four tefachim from the mound, and I know he says at one end of the Karpov. That's a little bit misleading. He means on one flank of the Karpov, and he erected a partition to re-enclose the area for residential use. It's effective. But if he erected the partition less than three tefachim from the mound, or on the upper edge of the mound. Not sure if he has a picture here or not. On the upper edge of the mound is Rav Chisda Chadomer Hoyel. One says it's effective to reenclose the Karpov, and the other says it's not effective. Tistayim de Rav Chisda Omar Hoyel. The Itmar Ha'osa Mechitza Gabi Mechitza. Omar Rav Chisda B'Shabbos Hoyel. Nichsei Ager Lo Kona. Nichsei Ager is another way of saying Hefker. And Rav Sheshes Omar Af B'Shabbos Nami Lo Hoyel. Let's see if he adds anything here in the notes. No, that's not relevant to us. He does say a partition constructed close to the pre-existing partition is invalid. Well, let's see what this is. The slope of the mound is sufficient to constitute a legal partition. The area of the Karpov, which exceeds two sela, besa, by a large measure, so that even after erecting a partition, the total area is still in excess of two besa, and its re-enclosure is that which permits the Karpov. This is like moving four tefachim back from the wall and beginning a new partition to enclose the Karpov. The Gemara speaks of a case in which the Karpov remains larger, yeah, that we know. Oh, here's what he has. He considers a partition built on top of an existing partition sufficient to re-enclose a Karpov for residential use. I think, in my humble opinion, he's missing the point over here. The point here is that we're dealing with a tail. All right? I don't know. I'm trying to see if, let's say, in the Hebrew translation, no, he goes into different dinim about the ger and yorshim and hefker. Okay, that's fine, but that's not what I was looking for. Okay. I don't know. You hear my problem? I mean, we just had a whole sugya before of Rabba and Rava about Hirchik min HaKosel v'Osa Sham Mechitza. And we had different versions of the Machlok Shin Rabba and Rava, where they were arguing in a case where there's 3 to 4, or even less than 3. And now all of a sudden the Gemara wakes up with an entirely different machlokes between Rav Chisda and Rav Hemnuna around the case of Hirchik Minatel Arba V'Yasa Mechitza. I mean, it sounds so similar to the previous Gemara. And here the Gemara analyzed it in terms of Mechitza Gabi Mechitza. Rav Chisda says, B'Shabbos, Hoyil. I mean, why didn't the Gemara quote this same Rav Chisda before when we spoke about Hirchik min HaKosel Arba V'Osa Mechitza? I mean, that should be the same issue. I don't know. I'm just going to leave you with this thought. I can't, you know, we'll pick up on Rav Chisda tomorrow, Mir Tashem, but I think this has to do with a tail. This is a special look in a tail. That would be my impression. All right, let's just make a note of where we got up to here on Daf Chaf Hey Amid Aleph. And we're up to Omar Li Rav Chizdo, Omar Rav Chizdo, Moda Li Rav Sheshes. Okay then?